You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
We're really excited, and it's a real privilege this afternoon to introduce to you Charlotte Gale. Charlotte and I hail from the same part, not a corner of the UK, because we're bang in the middle in Coventry, but we are from the same part of the UK. And everybody I know that has heard Charlotte is speaking at Greenbelt, some of whom are here, I know, has been so excited that she's getting this chance to speak to us and to share what she's got to say, because Charlotte is incredibly wise and has a lot to share about her journey of her and Naomi in creating St Clair's community at Coventry Cathedral, a really exciting way of doing community, and their kind of ethos of being simple, generous and open, which is incredibly Greenbelt, which is why you're all here. So we're very excited to hear what she's got to say. There will be a chance at the end, hopefully, for some questions. So if you do have things that you want to ask, there will be that opportunity at the end. And I know Charlotte's going to be signing books tomorrow at 5 too, and there'll be opportunities to speak to her there. And I'm sure if you see her around site, she'd be happy to chat to you then as well. But if you do have questions, then do hold on to those for the end. But please give a really, really warm Greenbelt welcome to Charlotte Gale.
Hello, Shelter. It is just so amazing to be here. And thank you all so much for coming. I've been coming to Greenbelt for about 25 years, and I was at Theological College training to be a vicar the first time I came. And so much of my theology and how I do ministry has been shaped by the things I've seen and heard here. So it's so special for me now to be a part of that rich tapestry of ideas and creativity that is Greenbelt. I'm not going to lie, there was always a small part of me that would sit and watch other people speaking and think, oh, do you know what? Maybe one day I'll write a book and get to come and talk about it at Greenbelt. But I still can't quite believe it's actually happened. The book, quick plug, is the story of St. Clair's at the Cathedral, which is a church community that me and my partner Naomi, who sat just there, set up 8 years ago. But it's also a story about me, because I really believe that it's in sharing our stories, the stories of who we are and what God has done in our lives, that we find hope and inspiration. So I want to start by telling you a story. A story which has really helped shape St. Clair's. The story is called Poor Mr. Smith. I remember being in the school car park. I have no idea why. I was chatting to Mr. Smith. Not his real name. I can't remember what he was called. He was a supply teacher, swooping in from time to time to cover physics or maths. He was also a Christian. And on a Tuesday lunchtime, when he was around, he would come along to the school's Christian Union to offer support and encouragement to us little band of faithful souls who met to chat, to pray, and to study our Bibles. I was 15 years old. I'd been in the CU for not much over a year, and it had changed my life. Since arriving at high school age 13, life there had become increasingly unbearable. I was constantly being bullied, and it was like a slow drip eating away at my soul. Lunchtimes were a living nightmare. I would spend as much time as I could in the library and would sometimes resort to hiding in the toilets. I dreaded that long and lonely hour each day. But then one day, out of nowhere, a miracle happened. I was sat on a bench in a corridor waiting for the minutes of lunch to tick by when I heard someone call my name. I looked up to see Heidi and Natalie stood in front of me. They were two of the bright and shiny, pretty girls for whom high school seemed so effortless. They were also Christians, but not like I was a Christian. I sang in the choir at the traditional church in the small town where I grew up, pretty much the only teenager in the place. They went to St. Paul's, the exciting evangelical church in the city where there was a youth group and a band and a trendy vicar. They spoke to me. "We're going to the CU. Would you like to come?" Like those first disciples in the gospel, without a word, without a backward glance, without hesitation, I stood up and followed. I'd found a place to belong. Joining the CU was a gateway to a whole other world. Soon I was also a member of that youth group at St. Paul's and would sometimes go to evening services there where we sang songs instead of hymns and prayed out loud. But back to the car park and Mr. Smith. The CU needed a new leader. With exams looming, the current leader had stepped down. Mr. Smith and I were chatting about who it might be. We were all a little bit in awe of Mr. Smith. He would entrance us with tales of his exciting missionary endeavours in Mozambique. He was attractive, charismatic, and intelligent, and treated us like grown-ups. As he and I chatted in the car park, he talked about who might take over the CU. Smiling at me, he said there was someone who showed real potential, who had natural leadership qualities, even if they didn't realize it. A warm glow spread through me as I waited for him to ask me if I would consider taking on the leadership role. I knew I had the skills to do it, but having someone like Mr. Smith notice that was a huge encouragement to a still fragile soul. But then, it gradually, horribly dawned on me that he wasn't talking about me. He was talking about Heidi. Heidi, who had said she had no interest in leading the CU. Mr. Smith couldn't see me because he couldn't see past Heidi. Not her fault. She was and still is lovely. But she was ridiculously pretty. With long red hair and sparkling green eyes, she was full of confidence and had an infectious laugh to go with her mischievous sense of humour. She also came from an impeccable evangelical background. Poor Mr. Smith. With the benefit of hindsight, I can see that he was so young and she was very appealing. But his bedazzlement was crushing to me. I still remember that awful feeling of rejection settling in the pit of my stomach. In the face of moments, my teenage self had gone from feeling on top of the world to feeling like a complete failure. All the confidence and joy I had gained in the preceding year was in danger of just draining away, as I realized that I still didn't fit. Fortunately, God is bigger than Mr. Smith's fallibility. And so I did end up leading the CU. But that small encounter in a car park still lives with me 40 years later. I'm going to hazard a guess that a lot of us here have had those moments in life when we just felt like we don't quite fit. We might be part of something, but still somehow feel like we're on the outside, a bit separate. And too often, that's in church. Church that should be a place where people are welcome and feel safe can be actually incredibly hard to navigate. Whatever the tradition, there are so many unspoken rules or a definite in crowd that you just don't know how to get into. If you are young or neurodiverse or just a bit socially awkward, church can be really alienating. And if you're queer, it's a place you may well not even be welcome in, or fear you won't be welcome. We set up St. Clair's with those people in mind. People who, for all sorts of reasons, just didn't quite fit in other churches. People like Holly, a lifelong Christian who left church not that long after her husband left her because she felt that she was making people feel uncomfortable with how sad she was. Dave, who never went to church because of the crippling PTSD he had from serving in the Falklands, it meant he couldn't go anywhere with large groups of people. Sarah, who felt like a disappointment to her church because despite all their prayers for healing, she was still disabled. Ari, a teenage convert, who having been baptized, was then politely told that maybe she should find another church, as her sexuality meant she'd never really fit in with them. Or Leah, a student, who arrived at university and just wanted to find a nice, ordinary church like the one she grew up in, that was inclusive and where she could meet other young people. These are all real people who have found their way to St. Clair's. We also wanted to see if there was a way of doing church that freed us from some of the crippling levels of administration and massive workload that comes from being a conventional Church of England priest. And we felt we had ideas and wisdom to share with other churches and with the next generation. I was considered a young vicar when I was ordained at 30, and that was great. I got to be the trendy vicar. It wasn't so great when people still referred to me as a young vicar in my mid-40s. I loved the people in my churches, but I longed to be one of the oldest people in the room. And in St. Clair's, I'm often actually the oldest. So we wanted to set up a new church, a church that was simple, generous, and open. And so 8 years ago, St. Clair's was born. We're based at Coventry Cathedral, but have our own building. It's an old gift shop, nothing glamorous, that wasn't really used anymore. We transformed half of it into our worship space and the other half into a new shop, which not only provides our main funding stream, but is which is also a really important place of encounter and mission. Our three values, simple, generous, and open, really shape who we are and what we do. And over the next 20 minutes or so, I want to tell you something about each of these values, and then with a short act of prayer and reflection after each. So let's begin with our first value, simple. Life is complicated. There are endless decisions to be made, admin to be done, responsibilities to be fulfilled. It's exhausting. What if church was a place that didn't add yet more complications? What if you could just turn up without any fear that you might find yourself on a rota? Because there are no rotas. What if new things only got started if someone had a real passion to do it and then stopped if the passion faded or it began to feel life draining rather than life giving? What if there wasn't an endless drive to grow ever bigger because small is beautiful? And real relationships are more important than the number of bums on seats. Simple is a life-giving value. As pioneers, we knew we needed to travel light, not weighed down by all the expectations of traditional church. That way, we could be nimble, as one of our members put it, nimble in a fast-changing world. Simplicity allows for flexibility. So let me tell you another story. We were very excited when, in spring 2018, we had two young people wanting to be baptized, our first adult baptisms. They really wanted full immersion. There was clearly no way that was possible inside St. Clair's. There just wasn't enough room. So how and where to do it that still felt faithful to St. Clair's, but was possible and practical? After thinking about various options, we finally decided to do the service in the Coventry Cathedral ruins, right next to St. Clair's. The next decision was what to use for the baptism. The cathedral owned a large baptism pool, but people in the know told us it was a nightmare to put up, took an eternity to fill, and was almost impossible to get warm. The young woman being baptized was quite nervous about water, and we thought that if the water was properly warm, it would be much less traumatic for her. So we thought about buying something. So what we needed was a large water pool that was easy to put up, easy to heat, and not prohibitively expensive. If only someone had designed such a thing. Which of course they have. What we needed was an inflatable hot tub. Surprisingly affordable, the manufacturers of inflatable hot tubs really could do well marketing to them as churches, as baptistries. So it was that on a lovely Saturday evening in spring 2018, we found ourselves erecting a hot tub in the ruins of a medieval cathedral. It takes a while to fill with water. So while we waited, one of us went and got chips, and we sat and ate them, perched on an ancient tomb, in that ancient place, in the heart of the city we love. As we ate, the dean and his wife walked past, all dressed up in black tie and fancy frock, heading to a function at the Guildhall in the next street. They looked at us and smiled as we sat chatting to one another, eating our chips in the quiet, as they headed off to a noisy event full of small talk and different expectations. We laughed at the diversity of ministry and felt content at the roads not taken. Once the tub was full, we put the lid on, turned the heater on, and locked the gates of the ruins and left it to warm up, ready for the next day. The service was completely joyous, and the holy hot tub, as we now call it, was an absolute triumph. It wasn't perfect. We'd forgotten to tell the bell ringers not to ring, and it was very noisy. But perfection isn't what we are after. Authenticity, community, and helping people to encounter God are what we are about. And all those things were present in abundance. So let's pause there for a moment of prayer and reflection as we think about the value of keeping things simple. If you would like to, I encourage you to put down anything you're holding, to close your eyes, and to focus for a moment on your breathing. Know that God is present here with us, as close as the air we breathe. Now I invite you to clench one of your hands into a tight fist. Imagine that the fingers on that hand represent something in your life, or maybe several things, that are difficult or complicated or are weighing you down. Maybe there are things that you know you need to let go of, or let God help you to carry. I now invite you to use your other hand to unfurl each finger in turn. As you do so, asking God to release you from or help you with the burdens and complications you are carrying. Relax your empty hand as I pray. God of creation, your Son taught us to look at the lilies of the field and the birds of the air and to not worry. Help us not to carry unnecessary burdens and not to store up treasures on earth, but to live each day in the safety and freedom of your love. Amen. So our second value is generous. At the heart of this is the question, how can we use the things that God has blessed us with to bless others? One of the things I increasingly noticed as a parish priest was that one victim of the ever-increasing financial pressures on the church was a spirit of generosity. Instead, there was a barely veiled spirit of unhealthy competition between churches. Any clergy in here today, and I'm going to guess this is true whatever denomination you are, will have sat in meetings where you are asked to go around the room and share good news about your church. Spoiler, it's not always the uplifting experience that you'd think it might be. It's often downright depressing as clergy try to make sure that their church doesn't look like the worst in the room. I remember one meeting when I was excited to share that we'd raised £400 for new hymn books on just one day. Imagine how I felt when the next to speak was the vicar of the big church down the road, who triumphantly announced that their appeal for donations from the congregation for their building project had raised, wait for it, over £100,000. I didn't say anything. With numbers and finance in long-term decline in most of the UK church, the pressure to make sure you are growing, meaning growing numerically, has ironically forced churches to be more inward-looking, worrying endlessly about their own sustainability, anxious about numbers, and if they can afford the vicar. We knew that St. Clair's needed to be different. If we gave in to the kind of anxiety I've just described, we couldn't possibly survive, not as a new church. In one of the many discussions we had with the bishop before we started, he asked us what growth would look like for our new community. Not long after that, we went and looked round a building that was to be a possible home for St. Clair's. It was a disused church. The space was quite small, though actually nothing like as small as the building we ended up with. And in it, there were just 40 chairs. What we wondered, if growth was never needing to buy new chairs, but rather joyfully sending people on, equipped to be a gift to other churches. We knew that many of the people we wanted to reach out to would be young, students and new graduates. Young people tend to move on. They wouldn't be at a stage of life when they would stay with us forever. We needed to make sure that we didn't ever try and hang on to people conscious of numbers, but made sure that when it was time for them to leave, we sent them onward with our love and prayer, equipped to be faithful disciples wherever they went next. We designed a special liturgy of sending on. Our worship space has just 26 chairs. And one of the questions I am most asked about St. Clair's is, Oh, how many people do you have? So far, never more than 26. Well, actually, we are a few more, but they never all come on the same Sunday, so it's okay. But I've lost count of how many people have been part of our community over the last 8 years. Some for a few months, some for a few years, who we've sent onward with love to new places, churches, and adventures. Our answer to the bishop was that growth would not be about numbers. It would be about generously sharing people and resources. Because we were also determined that we would do everything we could to pay our own way. So we weren't taking money off other churches that desperately needed it. We were so blessed to get some funding when we started, but from day one, we were thinking about how to become financially sustainable. And that's a big part of why St. Clair's is a shop as well as a church. You can find us online. The shop is our biggest funding stream, but it's also another way in which we can be generous in our trading practices and in the ideas and resources we provide for countless other churches. The shop is a glorious way in which we can use the things that God has blessed us with to bless others. Naomi spends her days off sewing clerical shirts to sell. Various members of the community make jewellery for us to sell. Most of the design work and development of ideas comes from within the community. Our worship resources are a generous sharing of things we have tried out at St. Clair's. And that brings us such joy, because generosity brings joy. How can we use the things that God has blessed us with to bless others? Let's pause and think about that question for ourselves. So I invite you to open your hands, maybe rest them on your lap or on your knees. And as you look at your empty hands, think about what God has placed in them. What are the things you are holding? The gifts, the skills, the resources, the blessings you have received. Feel the weight of them in your hands. Give thanks to God for them. And ask God to show you how you might use just one of those things to bless others, maybe in a way you haven't done before. I now invite you to lift your hands just a little as an offering of God, an offering to God of the blessings we seek to share as I pray. Go out from here with a pocket full of free gifts to give to those you meet. Give freely of your love and concern as a token of the greater love of God. Give freely of your time and effort as a token of the sacrifice of Jesus. Give freely of your help and friendship as a token of the upholding Spirit. And may all you give and all you do cause others to seek the true gift of the God who blesses without end. Amen. Should say that's not my prayer. It comes from a lovely anthology called The Word in the World, and that particular prayer was written by Duncan Tuck, who is a URC minister. So finally, our third value is open. And maybe this is the most obvious one, and so the one I'm actually going to say least about, We wanted St. Clair's to be a space where all are welcome, especially those who had left church or not stuck with church because somehow they felt like they didn't quite fit. Our logo is an open circle. The way is always open for people to come in or to leave. But when inside, to be held in the embrace of community. Who we have welcomed has changed over the years. And right now, a lot of our new folks to us are those who have felt unwelcome at or been excluded from other churches because of their gender identity or sexuality. The door to our church is covered with rainbow hearts of all the different pride flags to make it really clear that when you arrive nervously at the door, you are welcome here. But there are all manner of reasons why people don't stay in churches. And we try to keep thinking about how we inadvertently might be excluding people. And so I'd like to close with a story about a maybe less obvious form of exclusion. Not long before we started St. Clair's, we attended an event with a friend who is considerably heavier than average. We were having a lovely day, but we'd been on our feet a lot and were all in need of a cup of tea. We made our way to the cafe and set about choosing a table. Then suddenly, inexplicably, our friend said that he'd changed his mind and that he didn't want a cup of tea after all, and he just remembered he was meeting up with some other friends. Or something like that. After making what were clearly excuses, he speedily disappeared. As Naomi and I sat down, slightly gingerly, as the chairs were not the most robust and neither of us is exactly slim, it dawned on us that this was why our friend had scarpered. It was the chairs. Not only were they a bit flimsy looking, but they were not very wide with narrow arms. Our friend just wouldn't fit in them. Until that moment, I'd never really given chairs much thought, at least not in that way. I had thought about whether a chair, especially a church chair, was comfy or not, and have sat in some almost intolerably uncomfortable pews. But I'd never had to worry about whether I'd physically fit in a chair or if it would take my weight. We'd been pondering on what kind of chairs to put in St. Clair's, and it now became clear that what we chose said as much about our openness and whether we were genuinely inclusive as any welcoming words. We were horrified at the thought that someone might walk in and feel panicked or humiliated by our seating. Nice modern church chairs are pretty good, but we didn't have the budget for those. And they didn't really fit the vibe we were going for in what would become our worship space. It was Naomi's creative thinking that gave us the answer: Lloyd Loom chairs. Those wonderful woven chairs, made of paper no less, that can be found lurking in the corner of every antique shop in the country. We set about scouring every antique shop, well, in our local area, for these lovely old chairs. We asked friends, we looked on eBay, we tried not to spend more than £40 a chair, got some for as little as a fiver, and some for free. This strange assortment of chairs of varying colours, styles, and conditions gathered in our garage. There were chairs suitable for tall people and short people, skinny people and wider people, people with bad backs, people who struggled to stand up, and those who just wanted something really cozy to sink into. Once we'd collected about 20 chairs, Naomi took them all in the garden and embarked on the labour of love needed to transform them from scruffy, ill-matching chairs to a symbol of welcome and comfort. She spray-painted them and upholstered the ones that had cushions. When she'd finished, they looked amazing. Each one different, but clearly matching. Just like us. All human, but each one of us unique. And with our own seating needs and preferences. One of our members, who has a disability, was away one Sunday as she was visiting her parents and went to the church she'd grown up in. When she returned, she told us of the startling revelation she'd made. She always thought that she found worship there really distressing and uncomfortable because of the worship style. But actually, it was also the chairs that they were really uncomfortable for her to sit in. At St. Clair's, there are a choice of chairs. And if she wants to, she's also welcome to sit on the floor. So for our final reflection, I'd like to invite you to place your hand on your chest where your heart is. Think about your heart. Feel your heart beating within you, sustaining the life that you have. Know that it is God who made your heart and made you. It is God who sustains you through their life-giving love. Maybe there have been moments in your life when you have felt excluded or like you just didn't quite fit or you weren't seen for who you really are. Maybe you still feel that way. Bring those experiences to the God who created and loves you. Know that whatever this world says, you are a precious, important, and treasured member of God's kingdom. Continue to feel your heart beating as I read from Psalm 139 from the Voice Translation. O Eternal One, you have explored my heart and know exactly who I am. You have surrounded me on every side, behind me and before me, and you have placed your hand gently on my shoulder. It is the most amazing feeling to know how deeply you know me, inside and out. You knitted me together in my mother's womb long before I took my first breath. I will offer you my grateful heart, for I am your unique creation, filled with wonder and awe. You have approached even the smallest details with excellence. Your works are wonderful. I carry this knowledge deep within my soul. Amen. Thank you again for being here and for listening. I'm hoping we now have time for a few questions. And with that, I'm going to invite Naomi to come and join me. If you'd like to know more about St. Clair's, please do buy the book or check out our website or come and chat to either of us because we always love talking about it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Charlotte, for sharing some of your story and some of your wisdom with us. There's so much to take away. We do have time for questions. Hooray. We'd like to keep that spirit of simple, generous and open with our questions. So please keep them simple. We'd love to hear from Charlotte and Naomi. So if you've got things you'd love to tell them, come and speak to them afterwards, but we'll keep this time for questions. So if you can keep it as short as possible, that's really helpful and simple, and then it's a bit easier to answer. And we also really want to be open. So if you've never asked a question at a talk at Greenbelt before, but you've got something you want to know, I'd really encourage you to put your hand up too and to go for it, and we'd love to come to you. The talk is being recorded, so by speaking into the microphone, your voice will be recorded. If that's a problem for you, please don't let that stop you asking a question, or if you just don't want to talk into the microphone, I'm quite happy to do it. So just let me know if I come to you, and just let me know, and I'm happy to relay your question. And please do wait for the microphone to get to you so that we can honour those using a hearing loop and also make sure it's captured. So if you have a question, stick your hand in the air and I'll try and get to as many of you as I can. Thank you.
Thank you for your talk. I love this value of simplicity. I think I really could do with more of that in our lives and church. I guess I was just thinking about how complex people's lives can be, particularly perhaps when they've come from being marginalised somewhere else. And I just wondered how you encountered that complexity with the simplicity value of your St Clair's community.
I think one of the reasons for the value of simplicity is because people's lives are complicated enough without making church complicated too. So the thing we say is we have space for complex questions, complex ideas and complex thinking, but within a simple structure. That answers your question. But we don't diminish the complexity at all of people's lives and want to give space to encounter that.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much. I can imagine in a community like yours, you get quite a lot of people who have been very generous in previous spaces in their life and then can't be generous again with their time and effort. How do you look after those people who just have nothing left to give for a while?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And there are definitely those people. I mean, I should say we don't have quite a lot of anybody because we're small. But there are definitely some people like that. But one thing that Charlotte talks about in the book, but she didn't talk about in the talk, is that we quite consciously, on the whole, don't have people who are migrating from one church to another. It's slightly different when they've been ejected from that church, but people who are just unhappy with the church they're in, we've done, particularly in the early days, it's less a thing now, but one of the things we were really encouraged by other pioneers we met before we started, because we went around and met people and were inspired by them, and we were really encouraged by them that taking the time to help people stay in the church they're in and address their issues with their own minister would also protect the space to create space for people who are not in church. So whilst yes, you're right, and yes, giving people space to just be who they are, and we definitely I'm thinking, we've got some St Clair's people here today, and I'm particularly thinking of one of their mums who was on every rotor in her old church. So yes, that was definitely the case, and just the space to be, and maybe sometimes volunteer to do the washing up after church, but often not.
I want to add to that, it comes back to simplicity again and the no rotors. Everybody at St Clair's, I think at the moment, is either in full-time education or work. So part of the thing about simple is that nobody has to do anything, that they can just turn up and be. And then there are wonderful people who want to do more, and we're all for that, but there's no expectation of it.
Hi. Could you give us an example of what a typical service might look like that you do?
Yes, we are a Eucharistic community, so it's pretty much always communion. We start at 12, which is a very civilized time of the day to have church. I can highly recommend it. Some of the students manage to get there mostly on time. And it's a really simple, pared-down common worship communion for those of you who are Anglicans, a really simple service. We sit in the round and whichever of us is leading just sits in the circle. If you buy the book, this is all in there, just so you know. And the the teaching is discursive. So there'll be a homily usually followed by a discussion or some sort of activity. Yeah, so simple. And after communion, we stand and sing a hymn together.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we say for lunch. So rooting it with a meal is really important.
Thank you very much. No rotas sounds wonderful, especially for people with fluctuating conditions and so on. But how do you actually do it?
Again, small helps. We now have two church wardens because we've, you know, grown a bit. And they do discuss with themselves who is going to be there each Sunday. So I don't know if that counts as a rota. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so to think about the practical things of what we do on a Sunday, Charlotte and I arrive, we usually leave home at 11, and if one of the wardens are there, they probably get there between 11:30 and 12. We set up communion, and there's not a lot of setting up. It's not like we're changing altar frontals and so on, so there isn't very much to do that. Only takes a minute. We pop the coffee on, and put up the sign saying shop closed, trying to stop people shopping while you're worshipping. It's apparently the moment they most want to shop. And we won't do that. You know, we do draw a line somewhere. So we put up bunting, because it's like a friendly barrier. So it's just a bit of that. And then afterwards, and the Bible reading. The Bible reading, so we have one Bible reading rather than several, and it's always printed for everybody. So there's a different weekly sheet every week, which is just the Bible reading and the closing hymn, and that's all the words that we print each week, which means that everybody's got it. So if somebody wants to, so we'll say, would anybody like to read? And usually somebody says yes. Now, if you're in a non-book culture kind of a church, that wouldn't be great. But we have a lot of students and recent graduates, a lot of professional people. So there are plenty of people who are really comfortable to read. And if they glance at it and they see a lot of horrible names, then one of us does it.
Anyone else?
Hello. How would you say for both of you, your sense of faith and your relationship with God has changed throughout your St. Clair's journey?
Thank you so much. Helen is part of St. Clair's community. This is a cunning way of like grilling your vicar, isn't it? Oh, I'm very happy to answer. No, I'm very happy to answer because the answer is joyful and not hard. It has been incredible. It's the first time that in my life that I go to a church which feels like my church. I don't mean my church because we started it. I mean my church because it's the church I'd go to if I wasn't a vicar. And I've loved all the other churches. I mean, passionately loved all the other churches that we've served in. They've been wonderful, but it's been my calling to serve them. St. Clair's is just where I go. And one of the things that's incredible about the discussion time is that if you trust people, particularly people who haven't got a long faith background, people who are quite new to faith, they have new things to say about the Bible and about God. And I learn so much and I'm incredibly grateful for it. But also I felt really held by the community, really able to be vulnerable with them and tell them. I had some mental health problems, particularly this last year. I've been able to be honest about that, which is just incredible. And they look after me, and I hope we look after them.
Thank you so much. I was really curious about your kind of intention to be a small church, and how have you navigated kind of conversations around growth with kind of the diocese and with the wider churches around expectations?
Great question. I don't think we started thinking we were going to be intentionally small, but it's...
Well, we did because of the chair thing.
Well, we did, but yes, but not... Yeah, maybe we did. But it's become ever clearer that is really, for now, what God's calling us to.
Being important is...
Yes.
...has grown, yeah.
Sorry.
I think it being so important has grown in significance.
Yes. But the thing that makes the big difference... I think most of the an unsaid thing about the reason why powers in churches want you to grow is financial. We'd love to say that we want more people in church because it's growing the kingdom, and of course we want to do that. But the main reason why you need a certain number of people in a church is because it reaches the point when they can afford to pay for a minister. So for us, having financial sustainability, which we are very close to with the shop and community giving, is just this extraordinary release from realizing that, oh, it doesn't matter if we stay this size. It doesn't matter if we have all people who haven't got two beans to rub together, because we're not, our finances and our growth aren't interconnected. And that has been hugely liberating.
Can I add something? Yeah. I think to take on the question about the diocesan authorities, they are less interested in us than they are in the church HTB plant down the road. That's just how it is. They just are. And that has been hard sometimes. And there's a chapter in the book that I suspect our archdeacon wouldn't enjoy reading if he's read it, but he probably doesn't read books about churches like ours. I don't know. Because it hasn't been easy, and they don't, I think it's fair to say, we certainly don't feel they celebrate us, but it works. So they, at a minimum, they tolerate us. Most important to say is that the cathedral celebrates us. And the cathedral, initially, I say that we were like a baby left on their doorstep. And they were like, okay, we'll look after it. But, oh, wow, we weren't expecting that. And now we're part of the family. And they nurture us and absolutely celebrate us and champion us. And the bit of money that we're not quite getting to sustainability, the cathedral kick in.
Hi, having read the book, I was particularly interested in how you got the kind of discursive bit of the service after you'd had the reading. So I just wondered if you want to say a little bit more about how you get that happening and people feeling that confidence that what they've got to say is worth exploring and sharing.
One of the reasons we did it was because we had a sabbatical before we started St. Clair's and went and visited a lot of churches similar to the one we'd hoped St. Clair's would be. And we noticed that in all these places, they had some interaction. And we thought about how that's kind of how contemporary society works, rather than you just sitting and listening to someone talk. But thank you very much for sitting and listening to me talk. But we were all particularly struck by one church where they did Lectio Divina. So basically just a sort of reflection on the Bible reading. And they were all these young people. And the level of theological insight and wisdom in the room it blew our minds. It was incredible. And so we just decided to be brave and think, well, we've got a bunch of intelligent people in the room. Let's see what happens if we just open the floor to them and are not defensive about what the right answer is and not pressured if nobody says anything. And it just grew from there, that the spirit moved and yeah, I sort of write an opener and then the sermon happens while we are there.
We have probably time for one, maybe two more, depending on how short the answers are, if there are any more.
Thank you for your talk. It's a very simple question, although you might not know the answer. What is the bestseller in your shop?
I know the answer, yeah. My bestseller is a product called Face to Face with Jesus, which is a pack of 40 postcards of Jesus, different images of Jesus through the ages and across the globe. And some of you will remember that CMS and USPG together, many years ago, those of you a certain age, produced this fabulous pack called The Christ We Share. And those of us who had a copy would hang on to it like gold dust because it was so brilliant. But it's been out of print for donkey's years. So I thought, well, let's create a new version of it. So it's a really simple idea. You get a box with these 40 postcards in that you can use in all sorts of ways with all these amazing different images of Jesus, including some created by members of the St. Clair's community. So that's definitely our bestseller, followed by the finger labyrinth.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think we do need to stop there. But thank you so much for a brilliant range of questions. Really interesting to engage with that. So thanks so much. And thank you again, Charlotte and Amy, for your authenticity and wisdom this afternoon. So can we give them a big thank you?
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.